Thank you very much, Stephen, and good morning, everybody. It's a great privilege and a pleasure to be here, and I'm going to talk to you this morning very briefly about my time in royalty protection. But before I do so, I'll just perhaps introduce myself, because you don't know me from Adam, and I don't know you, and you think, what's this man doing up here, and what's he talking about? I'm going to try and talk to you about my life in looking after various members of the royal family, and also my life as a Christian, which are very much intertwined. So what about me? Well, I was born and brought up the other side of London in Essex. My father was a builder after the war, and I was the eldest of six children. I was very lucky because I had a Christian mother, and I used to go to Sunday school. And I remember that she wrote in one of her Bibles that she gave me in 1962 a lovely verse that I've never forgotten. I have set before you life and death, therefore choose life. I had a terrible education because my father, who was starting his own building business, decided that the eldest child, being a boy, would be on the roof, would not be at school. I went to a secondary modern school, and when I was 15, I left school with about as many qualifications as nil. And my parents had, their great ambition for me was to work in a shop. And they thought, well, if you're going to work in a shop, you better work in a good shop. And I went to Selfridges. And after about a year of going around the West End of London collecting books for the book department, they said to me, would you like to be a trainee buyer? I thought that was good. And they said, well, you've got a terrible East London accent, you'll have to go and have elocution lessons. So from my sort of beginnings, humble beginnings, where I was brought up with little or no education, and then suddenly I found myself subsequently looking after the Queen for quite a long period of time. And one of the reasons I wanted to sort of highlight that is because when I was younger, I became a Christian in my late teens, and I noticed in the Connection magazine that one of Stephen's heroes is Billy Graham. And of course, I went to one of his crusades at Earl's Court in 1968 or thereabouts, and became a Christian then. And my mother's text, I have set before you life and death, that she wrote in my Bible, became very apparent, because although I worked in Selfridges, I hated it. I became an assistant buyer when I was 19, but I also decided, a friend of mine, it was about the time of the Vietnam War, and he said to me, let's go and join the American Marines and go to Vietnam. And I thought, I don't actually fancy doing that, but what I did do was I joined the territorial wing of the Special Air Service, and I had a very unfortunate parachute accident where I actually thought I might die. And so I have set before you life and death, and coinciding with Billy Graham, going to hear him, I became a Christian in my late teens. So I joined the police force in 1969, and then worked my way up to inspector, and then when I was an inspector at Marylebone, I decided that I'd like to specialise, and I went into royalty protection. So that's my sort of introduction. What do you think of a protection officer? What do you think a bodyguard is? Very often people have very sort of strange images of what a protection officer might look like. Well, actually, hopefully, the ones that are surrounding the Queen actually slightly are not the bouncer types that you find at the nightclub, in Soho. Protection has always been part of the royal family. Queen Victoria, as you know, was until very recently the longest-serving monarch. Pleased to say that that record has been broken. And she reigned, obviously, from 1819 to whatever it was, 1901. Well, she had seven attempts on her life. Seven attempts. And she actually was very clever, actually, because what she did was that she actually used the attempts and exploited the questionable protection that she had in order to enhance her own prestige. And one guy that tried to kill her, he got 24 years in an asylum. I mean, they didn't muck about in those days, so that's what happened. But in her diaries, and the interesting point here is that she said, I thank God for saving my life. And I've been fortunate enough in royalty protection to travel around the world, And I'm absolutely amazed. I was just outside Calcutta one day, and I saw this huge statue, very much similar to the picture of Queen Victoria. So she popped up everywhere around the world. Well, let's go into the last century and move on. And of course, some of you will remember that in 1974, there was an attempted kidnap of Princess Anne. Now, you know, sometimes protection is a bit smoke and mirrors, to be honest. People think there's more than there is. Princess Anne had one protection officer, a guy called Jim Beaton, and that's him now, who got the George Cross. And it was a nasty to-do in the Mall. The guy was mentally disturbed. He tried to bundle Princess Anne into a car. There was no backup car. There was no bodyguard training. There was hardly anything, to be honest. And what used to happen was that the Metropolitan Police would say, oh, you're an inspector at Brixton. You're seconded to go and look after the royal family. It was a bit like that. But that happened, and then in 1979, we had Mountbatten, and then, of course, in 1981, you've got here, the Princess of Wales came on the scene. And that's really when I joined Royalty Protection. And this is a picture of her with the man behind her. It was her police officer at the time. And Princess Anne, Princess of Wales, of course, drew much more attention. So I went into Royalty Protection in 81. I was an inspector at Marylebone. And I worked for her for about 6 months. And by that time, things were getting slightly different. Protection was taken a bit more seriously. We used to do a bodyguard course down in Hereford with the SAS. Obviously, shooting and being able to shoot straight was quite a necessary skill. And it was quite important to shoot properly, because otherwise you find that you have an actual accidental discharge and you shoot your toe off, which is not very pleasant. But there we are, you know. So it's not... I'm sorry, probably at breakfast, it's probably not the right one. Should we move on? Let's do some running. So part of the skill of being a protection officer, if you like, is being able to be able to shoot, be physically fit. And as I said, we went to Hereford, which it doesn't exist on the map. If you look at it and try and find Poultraris, which is the camp, it doesn't exist. So that we were down there in Hereford. And obviously, these are just different pictures of different protection officers. There is the guy on the left of the Prince of Wales, Tony Parker, me in the middle, and Steve Burgess on the right with the Duke of York. So every member of the royal family is assigned a protection officer, and it's a responsibility of the Metropolitan Police Commissioner to provide that protection. So what happened to me? Well, I was a very young inspector. I was in my early 30s at the time, and Princess of Wales had just got married in 81, and I went to look after her. Well, it was quite a baptism of fire for both of us, because she was a young princess. She would do sort of things like, she had a Ford Escort at the time with a little frog on the front. And she would go and look and meet her friends down at Fenwick's in Bond Street. And we'd park the car outside on the double yellow lines. And we'd go downstairs. We'd meet all her mates. And then we'd go down to Highgrove, which was brand new at the time. Well, not a brand new house, but it's brand new for the Prince of Wales. And then she'd go and wander off. And I wonder where on earth she was. And so, guess what? After about 6 months, I got the sack. But actually, you know, God has a purpose for every one of us here, and he had a purpose for me. And sometimes these things happen in life, you know. Some things, I thought, this is charming. I was quite a successful inspector working on a relief at Marylebone. I joined Royalty Protection. After about 9 months or thereabouts, she got sacked. I got the sack. So I thought, well, that, you know, where's that going? Had I not got the sack, I would never, ever have been the Queen's police officer and all that entailed. So God has a plan, God has a purpose, and sometimes you think you're going in that direction, but he says, actually, I want you to go over here. So, what happened? Well, I was fortunate. I went to work for the Princess Anne, after the Princess of Wales, and I went down to Gatcombe in Gloucestershire. And Princess Anne actually taught me my job. The reason why, of course, is that she'd had a police officer with her ever since she was in the pram. And so her children were quite young at the time, and there is a picture of Zara in her arms and Peter Phillips, and there's another one, the Windsor Horse Show, with me sort of doing my bodyguarding bit, carrying the children. You know, it's an interesting job. But one of the things she did teach me was the relationship that you have to build up. Because if you go back to the pictures I showed you about being able to shoot, being physically fit, being able to eat your peas with a fork or whatever it happens to be, you know, the most important thing for a protection officer with a member of the royal family or anybody else for that matter is the relationship. You've got to have a relationship. And as I went through my career from Princess Anne to Prince Philip to the Queen, it's all to do with a relationship. And it's exactly the same with God, really. And when I talk to people and they say, you know, what are you talking about? You have a relationship with God. How can that possibly be, you know? My first overseas trip with Princess Anne was to the Yukon. And as I travelled across, you know, the far north of Canada, you know, you're aware, aren't you, of the creation of the world. And God actually speaks to us through creation. But how can you have a relationship with him? Well, as a protection officer, you have a relationship with the principal. And as a Christian, you have a relationship with God himself. More about that a bit later on. So Princess Anne, well, she taught me my job, took me to the Yukon and goodness knows wherever. She became the president of the Save the Children Fund when she was 20. We visited over 70, well, she visited over 70 countries. And some of the more interesting ones were, of course, in Africa. I went to Somalia with her, to Beirut, to Yemen, and so on. And it was quite an interesting thing. Also, it wasn't just all glamour in these far-flung countries. That's me carrying my boots as we were at a horse show somewhere in the UK. And this is when we were in Africa and she wanted to go to Somalia. And what happened there was that the government decided that she couldn't go. Well, of course, you know, very rarely do you tell the royal family they can't do something. It just makes them more determined to do it. And we went to Somalia, then we went up to Djibouti, and there had been just a children's home blown up in Beirut, and we went there. So, what do you do as a protection officer? Well, you're with her all the time, or whoever the principal is, and it doesn't matter whether you're overseas, or whether you're carrying your boots, or in a desert, or whatever it happens to be. And it was a very interesting couple of years with her. She's obviously involved in three-day eventing. She's Chancellor of various universities, or was then, of London University. So whether it's business or private or whatever it happens to be, the police officer goes with her. You tend to have more people to help you, but it's about the relationship that you have. So I spent a couple of years with the Princess of Princess Anne, and then after that, this was the best time of my life. Prince Philip hates policemen. Don't quote me, but he's not very pro them, that's for sure. And he's not very pro all the fuss and all the, you know, all the things that go with it. He's one of the. I think, in a sense, you either like him or hate him, really. And I certainly like him. So I had come from Gatcombe, where we had done three-day eventing and that type of equestrian sport, to carriage driving. So when I went to Prince Philip in about 84, I said to him one day, I don't know anything about carriage driving. You know, can I come out with you in Windsor Great Park and, you know, tell me what's what. So we did. And what happened was that, this is a picture of not him in Windsor Great Park, but he went through one of the obstacles and turned the carriage over and was stuck between the carriage and the obstacle. So Tarzan here lifts the carriage off and we hobbled back together. And about a week later, he said to me, you know, he didn't actually thank me, but the sentiments of what he was saying to me were something like that, if you get my drift. So, carriage driving, he represented Great Britain in carriage driving in Hungary, in the World Championships there, international president of the Worldwide Fund for Nature, and served, as you know, as chancellor of numerous universities. So just a few pictures of the carriage driving. So the protection still, it doesn't matter if it's state open in a parliament or whether it's in a desert in goodness knows where, or whether this happens to be, I think, Flora's Castle. So there's yours truly hanging on to the back of the carriage in case he goes without me. And then you've got the water jumps, I think. That one. That one is at Windsor Castle. And there's another one, I think. Oh, we're going to go back a bit. That one, yeah, that's... So, because he was involved in carriage driving, he also helped to expand the sport. He never does anything by halves. And before the days of computers, really, Prince Philip was taking around the world about 5,000 boxes, which were the computers that he put together. You know, he was a pilot, or is a pilot. He got his wings in 1953, and... when we converted, or when he converted from flying the Andover of the Queen's Flight, which is a turboprop, to the 146 jet, of the three royals that fly, Prince Philip was the first one to actually convert to a jet. So whether he married the Queen or not, he would have been, in my judgment, a captain of industry or whatever. And very often, you know, the bishops in the Church of England are all invited very often to go to Sandringham when the Queen is at Sandringham, and the bishops preach at the local Sandringham church, and that's when Prince Philip has a real opportunity to grill them. And I think that can be quite an entertaining experience, because I've often spoken to them afterwards. So he's got his own point of view on faith and religion. So the next one that I'll show you is the yacht. I did several voyages on the yacht in the Bahamas and Australia. Cows. Queen loved it. Loves the yacht. It's a shame that it's gone, but that's the way life is. And consequently, after Cows Week, she would go round the Western Isles and so on. So this was used very much as a sort of floating hotel. So we'd fly out to Timbuktu or wherever, and then we'd get on the yacht, and the yacht would be used to entertain, and it was a great ambassador place promoting the UK. Okay, so I spent a few years with Prince Philip, and then in 1992, I spent the rest of my career, a few pictures of the yacht here. This is all the household that go with. So this lot, we have a photograph taken when we're on the yacht, and so you've got an admiral and you've got the private secretary, you've got the Queen, Prince Philip, I can't remember who the lady in blue is, and then you've got Sir Philip Moore, who became Lord Moore, who was the private secretary, and that's basically the team that go round with her. Of course, what happens when the Britannia is at sea for a couple of days, we tend to find a remote island somewhere. So the staff sort of disembark, and then we have a barbecue. And then if we've got more days at sea, we muck about, because we're always escorted by a warship or a frigate or whatever it is. And then we have great fun with that, sort of going across and muck about. You know, just enjoying ourselves. Shouldn't really tell you this, really, but I mean, basically, the yacht was a fabulous way of going from country to country. And when we were at sea, then there were other activities that took place. So there's just a few pictures. This one is not a very good one, and I apologize for the quality. Someone said, there are not many pictures of you with the Queen. Well, they're not, because I tried desperately not to be in them. You will know that I'm incognito, because the person that's on the poster outside is my double. It's not me. So this picture was of the beach in the retreat. So when we would leave a place at night and sail off into the sunset, you know, you'd have the Royal Marines doing the beach retreat, which was really fabulous. The only pictures I really took are not of me, but of my accommodation, to try and remember. And this was my accommodation in the yacht, just about above the deck. This one is out of sequence. This is just the Queen and Prince Philip. A horse show. When we do, before we go anywhere, of course, we have to go everywhere twice. So we do recces. So this was a Worldwide Fund for Nature one. I don't know what that one is. One of the things I did want to say to you was that some years ago, Prince Philip went to Assisi, where all the major religions of the world met in Assisi to talk about faith and unity. And they asked Prince Philip whether he would write an article for this magazine called The New Road. And it's the magazine of WWF Conservation and the Religious Network. And he said, no, I won't, he said. But my policeman might, because, you know, he's quite religious. So I did, you know, it wasn't a very long article, you'd be pleased to know. But anyway, I wrote this article on creation. And it was quite interesting, because subsequent to that, I got a letter from a lady who was married to a professor at Harvard and said, I'm quite interested on conservation and the climate and all the rest of it. And we corresponded. So, you know, it is a small world. And I used to find Prince Philip quite amusing, because we'd get off the plane somewhere, and before we'd sort of got from the plane to the reception area or the VIP lounge or whatever it happened to be, he'd be talking to the president or whoever came to meet him about birth control or about the climate change or whatever. And WWF, as it was called then, it's now called the Worldwide Fund. It changed its name slightly, but whatever it is. He was so an advocate of it, you know, about the species that are disappearing, about our stewardship of the world and so on. And he certainly let rip into quite a lot of people. So, you know, he's a great advocate and ambassador. And also, of course, so that was the article I wrote. And, of course, this is him at Cambridge. So it's just a real flavour, I guess, of the type of life that they lead, you know, and what they do and how they do it. There will be questions afterwards, so I shall sort of skip through this pretty quickly, and then we'll have the opportunity to ask me whatever you want subsequently. So the Queen, I joined in 1992. I was also responsible, because I then became a chief inspector and superintendent, so I had other people to look after and other protection officers. So this is, of course, the late Princess Margaret, who used to go to Mustique on a regular basis, and I used to be rung up at home very often saying, Princess Margaret has just stepped into a bath. She's a little tipsy, and the bath is very hot, and we've got a problem. You know, what do I do? You know, or whatever it happened to be. So whatever problems there were, you know, the protection officer would ring me up and sort of ask me what I was responsible for them as well. Virginia Waters is a lovely place, and I know it a little, because I spent most of my weekends actually here at Windsor Castle. What happened and what still happens is that the Queen spends most of her time Monday to Friday at Buckingham Palace, which is really the office. It really is the office to some extent. But she loves coming at the weekends to Windsor and spending her time at Windsor. And of course, every Sunday, the Queen would go to church in the Great Park, and we'd drive straight down the long walk to church. And then after church, in those days, we would go and see her mother, who she relied on, I think, greatly. Another picture, this is my bedroom at Windsor, which I have spent so long. You know, you're there all the time. So you spend quite a lot of time waiting, necessarily, because she had the Great Park, or she had the home park to some extent, where she'd go and walk the dogs or whatever. But then when she wanted you, she'd call you. This is the Royal Windsor Horse Show. This one is of... everything happens. You know, I could tell you almost what she's doing tomorrow, because it happened last year, it happened today, and it happened next year. So this is the garter service. It's just a flavour of the sort of things that the garden party... And this, of course, is at Sandringham. So we go to Sandringham for Christmas. Sandringham and Balmoral are the two places that are owned by the monarch. Obviously, Windsor Castle isn't. Another picture of the bedroom. That's the back of Sandringham. That's the bedroom, my bedroom at Sandringham. And I put this in because I love dogs. I've got three dogs of my own, and so does the Queen. Sometimes I think, actually, she seems to sort of like horses, dogs and people in that order. And you can quite understand why. And what happens, her father was keen on Labradors. And when they die, these poor doggies die, there's a sort of plaque that's put on the wall. So she spends a lot of time, not just with the corgis, but also with the dogs, the Labradors as well. Go to church. This is a picture of outside Sandringham Church with the late Princess of Wales. And, of course, pageantry. And when we go to Ascot, which most of you will be aware of, living so close, the guy on the back of the carriage is obviously one marked with the X, would be one of my backup people. So everyone has their own protection officer, but in addition, I have a team of people that are employed in another way. So all sorts of stuff, walkabouts, Ascot again, a couple of Ascot pictures. When I left the police force, for some peculiar reason, I was asked to write an article in the Royal the Evening Standard about the risk business. This is another one that appeared on the front page of the Mirror, bumping into you. And that one was taken in Norfolk when I think she was up there. So what I'm trying to say very badly is that we go in cycles. So at the moment, where are we? In September, October, she will be in Balmoral. And Balmoral is 50,000 acres of wonderful countryside. It was bought in 1852 by Queen Victoria. And the Queen absolutely loves it there. So what do they do when they go to Balmoral? And what does a protection officer do? Well, they go up there for their holiday. The Queen hardly ever has a holiday overseas. Occasionally she went to America to see some horses. But the sort of things that they would do would be, life goes on as normal. The red box still comes up. The court moves there. But she will either go horse riding or out with the ponies, or every weekend they would go. Queen Victoria built quite a lot of houses on the estate. You know, 50,000 acres is quite a lot of real estate. And they would drive literally for half an hour into the wilderness of Balmoral and have a picnic. And so if you were going up there for the weekend as a guest, you know, you wouldn't be sitting down to a palatial supper in the castle. You're more likely to go out into the countryside. That is the other aerial view. And one day we had arrived at Balmoral And this is a Wessex helicopter, which they don't fly them anymore, but it was there was a squadron of the Queen's Flight. I think it's now been commandeered by the politicians, but basically it was the Queen's Flight at that point. And so she decided one day to go into the countryside to see her staff. And they live, obviously, in Balmoral, scattered around. And these are some different photographs that you wouldn't have otherwise seen of the Queen meeting her staff out and about in the countryside. So they'd be the gillies and so on. The other thing that they do, of course, is grouse shooting on a regular basis. Guests are invited to come up. There's a picture of them all having their lunch. And on Sunday, of course, that's a picture of Crafty Church. So the Queen would always go to church on Sunday. A picture here of the Boffy, where the policemen live, and a couple of other buildings. That is the Castle of May, where Queen Elizabeth, Queen Mother, resided, and Burke Hall as well. One of the things that I wanted to say about the Queen is that she is a hugely gracious, and this was in Australia, with the humility of the Queen. And, you know, I kept this really because humility is one of the great characteristics of a Christian, actually, like compassion, which she has in bucket loads as a woman, not only as the monarch. And she was serving Australia is my privilege and my pleasure. And that was at a time when we went to Australia, when they were trying to sort of, there was a great sort of swell of opinion that wanted to sort of make it a republic. And she dealt with it terribly well. And these are just a couple of pictures of walkabouts that we had in that part of the world. Back in the UK, this is a walkabout with Tony Blair, who was then Prime Minister. And this picture was of Dunblane, where we were in Windsor Castle one Sunday afternoon and then flew up to Dunblane for the memorial of the people that were killed there. When we go abroad, it is the host country that is responsible. So if we went to Canada, this is an assistant commissioner of the RMCP with myself. The responsibility for the protection of the royal family when they're overseas rests very much with the host country. A couple of pictures, we do a recce beforehand, and then when we've done the recce, we produce documentation, obviously. This is a program of the Queen going to Nepal, Princess Anne in Canada, a visit to Barbados, and so on. So everywhere that the member of the royal family goes to, the protection officer will go twice. Advance party for the Queen's visit. I can't remember where that is. The man in the middle is the Queen's private secretary. We're all wearing top hats, so it's all very serious stuff. This was taken in Dudley. So you will see that the car on the left, I think it's the Rover. The Rover is the backup car. You can see how old it is, a bit like ancient history now. But so you've got the royal car with the chauffeur, the Queen, and normally her lady-in-waiting or Prince Philip if he's around. And then you've got the backup car on the left, and then the other limousine would be carrying the members of the household, private secretary, equerry. Now, the equerry is changed round on a sort of three-year basis. The private secretary is one private secretary for the Queen, and she has several assistant private secretaries, in fact, two. Couple of things, really, in my time there, and talking about relationship again, is that a couple of years in my time were quite difficult ones for her. In 1992, for example, we had it's when she described the year as annus horribilis, because it was a year, I think, when let me think, it was Prince Andrew and the Duchess of York separated, Princess Anne divorced. We had the fire that destroyed Windsor Castle, you remember. It took 2 days to put out, and then she described 1992 as a pretty horrible year. Another difficult year, I think, for her was in 1997, when, of course, the Princess of Wales died. And that was probably the most interesting year for me in my 20 years, because I was the protection officer with the Queen at Balmoral. I was woken up about 1 o'clock in the morning, and what happened was that someone said to me, we think the Princess of Wales has been involved in an accident in Paris. She didn't have any police protection, because although I said she sacked me after 6 months, you would know that she sacked everybody eventually, from ladies-in-waiting to policemen to everybody. And so what happened was that we decided, when we found out, I called the private secretary who was staying in a house on the estate. He came in about 1 o'clock in the morning, and we decided obviously to wake the Prince of Wales up, and then we got a landline between, or I think it was a mobile, between the British ambassador who was in Paris, who went to the hospital with the private secretary, and I was probably about the second person in the UK who was told that she had died. So then we had the big deal of what do we do, because in a sense all the members of the royal family had to be told prior to them being found out on Sky News 2 minutes later. The televisions were taken out of the boys' nursery. All the members of the family were told individually. I woke Prince Andrew up and told him. And then, as you know, the rest is history, so much history that they made a film about it that week between the day that she died and when she was buried. And it was a very interesting week. And I think unjustly, the Queen, from my perspective, received quite a lot of poor publicity and unjust publicity, because both the boys were there. They were in the sort of bosom of the family. We went to church in the normal way. I remember an inquiry coming to me and saying, "You're quite religious. Why didn't the vicar pray?" It wasn't a vicar, because it's the Church of Scotland, whatever he was called. "Why didn't he pray for the soul of the Princess of Wales, you know, because she had just recently died?" And we didn't have a great debate on theology, but I tried to explain to him that actually, you know, when people die, it's a bit late then, you know. It's not done. And then the whole week was quite interesting, because what was going to happen was that I think the Queen was simply going to come down to the funeral on the Friday. And then we had the business about the flag and the overwhelming grief that was happening in London, which we didn't really understand in Balmoral because we were a long way away. And then, of course, the flowers, as you see by the picture, started coming. And then, of course, the rest, you know, the Queen came down and made that speech outside Buckingham Palace and the funeral and so on. And then that was 1997. So 2 years stick in my mind, 92, 97. And then at the end of the last millennium, I decided to leave. So what's all this about in relation to my sort of Christianity, really? Well, I said to you that my mother put this thing in my Bible years ago, "I've set before you life and death." And when I've sort of been around the world, I've spoken to people about Christianity, a lot of people actually say, "Why are you a Christian?" You know? When I first became a Christian, I thought it was like sort of getting on an escalator that was going up. You get on the escalator, you go through life. When you get off the escalator, you go to heaven, and that's it. I found actually my Christian life has been the opposite, really. It's been like getting on an escalator that's coming down. You know, everything's trying to pull you down and you're sort of going up. But I'm a Christian because I believe it's true. I don't think it's boring or irrelevant, as a lot of people do. And I've been very fortunate. I've got a map in my study of all the places I've been to. And I've been to a lot of different countries that I wouldn't otherwise have gone to. And, you know, when you talk to people around the world, we are spiritual sort of creatures, aren't we, really? There's a sort of God-shaped void in all of us to some extent. And I found that one of my favourite verses that I'll just close with is John 3:16. You know, I found that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. You know it very well, that whosoever believes in him shall not perish but have everlasting life. And I just want to say that for me, God's love is universal. You don't have to be middle class or working class or academic. You know, I was quite nervous about coming here this morning because Richard Bewes, who comes to this church, was my vicar years ago. And I view him as one of the great Christian communicators and got a brain that I can't even match, you know. And I thought, oh, God, how can I speak in front of him? You know, he's gone now, so it's all right. The talk got so boring, he decided to pack up and go. But you don't have to be academic. You know, I'm certainly not academic. I wish I was. You know, that's why I'm so keen on my kids being educated. Moral, go to church. Does God love the people that don't go to church around here? Of course he does. Does he love the good? Of course he does. And the bad? Yes, of course he does. And a lot of people that I meet seem to think that they're too bad for God, you know. You go to church, you're a bit sort of religious, but, you know, I'm too bad. I've done a lot of bad things in my life. Well, so have I. You know, when you become a Christian, you know, it doesn't preclude you from stuff. You know, look at the people that Jesus attracted when he was on earth, the prostitutes, the tax collectors, and the people that were allegedly religious, they were affronted. So I just want to leave you with a couple of thoughts to think about. What's your view of God? Do you think he's like Father Christmas? Do you think he's some stern headmaster? I don't know. Jesus said he's our loving Heavenly Father. And you can, it's amazing, but you can have a relationship through the Holy Spirit with God the Father. Because he loves us. He's that good shepherd. He loves individuals. You know, it's just amazing. And, you know, I love the story of the lost sheep. And I think that people are a bit like sheep. We get lost. I get lost. And all I want to say is that God so loved the world that whosoever believes in him, whosoever is you and me. So, you know it. I'm not going to preach to you. I'm just going to tell you that in my life, being a Christian hasn't always been easy. It's not a bed of roses. But I do know that life is very short. And as I look back from my sort of secondary modern school days to sort of being with the Queen and having a relationship with her, see what happens, I'll just close with this, because it's all about relationships, and being a Christian is all about a relationship. You've got the Queen in the middle, and then you've got the royal family, and the royal family are very tight. It's like all our families. Hopefully, you know, if you took all their trappings away and put them on a desert island, they'd survive much better than most of us. So that's that. Then you have a bunch of people called the royal household. You know, they're the good and the great and the private secretaries and the equerries and the ladies-in-waiting and all the rest of it. And they are like a sort of circle around them. You know, so no one can get in. You know, they sort of censor everything. But in comes Mr. Plod, the policeman, who is the protection officer. And guess what? He's next door. I sit next to the Queen. When Prince Philip's away somewhere on the other side of the world and she goes out to dinner, I go with her. When she's coming home, she talks to me about whatever it is that was happening that night, as you do, as you might do with your husband or your wife. I stand with her for 8 hours on a grass moor talking about all sorts of stuff, you know, from religion to politics to what she thinks of X, Y, and Z. The next day being Sunday, we go to church. I open the car door. She gets out. I might as well be the spare wheel. She looks straight through me as if I don't exist. But I know that I have a relationship with her. I know that because I've been with her for 8 years. And when I was with Prince Philip, I was with her looking after at Windsor as well for quite a time. So we know each other. How can I get into the presence of the Queen? Well, I was fortunate from my humble beginnings. I sort of ended up where I was because I believe that God had a plan for my life. Look at this wonderful day that we've got today and the world in which we live. and the Creator. Well, God's revealed himself, hasn't he, through creation. He's revealed himself through the Bible. He's revealed himself through his Son. How can I have a relationship with him? How can I break through? Well, the barrier is not the household. The barrier to stop us having a relationship with God is sin. And of course, Jesus Christ has broken through that barrier. And so we have an opening to him. So you can know God. Can you know God? You know, some people go to church for years and years and years and years. And I know people that do. And they have no more know God than fly to the moon. But you can know him. That's my preaching done. Sorry about that. But anyway, this is a Christian church. This is a Christian talk. I've gone on for far too long. I'm not very good with PowerPoint. Richard told me when I was sitting having breakfast, he's written his new book, Effective Public Speaking, which I probably need to read again. And he's introduced a section on PowerPoint. So I'm going to shut up, turn the PowerPoint off, and say thank you very much for listening. And if you've got any questions, I'd be very happy to answer them, provided they don't breach the Official Secrets Act. It's quite interesting because, to be blunt, I haven't done this talk for 15 years. I only did it for a couple of times when I left, and I used to go and speak at schools, and I used to get some fabulous questions like, you know, does Prince Philip wear pyjamas, you know, or whatever, you know. If you want to know, ask me privately, I'll tell you. But I have shared a sauna with him, so we won't go any further than that. Anyway,
David, thank you so much for that very intimate insight into your work for the royal family and your own personal Christian faith. We've got a few minutes for questions. We're going to finish about 9:30, and I'm going to start with a question. You've really underplayed the pressure and the stress you must have been under every day from the moment you woke up to the moment you fell asleep. Because your primary role is to protect that very special person mm-hmm. and to put yourself between them and any risk. Mm-hmm. So you must have had eyes at the back of your head all the time. You might have been enjoying having fun, you know, informal as well as official, formal occasions, but you must have been constantly looking for that deranged person with a gun or that a terror threat. All that training you'd had in the police.
I think
how did you handle that, that stress?
Okay, I think two things really. One is that after the kidnapping of Princess Anne, or the attempted kidnapping, after Mountbatten was killed, you know, I mean, the world's changed since I left. 15 years ago, we got suicide bombers. We've got a whole different ball game now. But in my day, I suppose it's being confident in your own ability. So the training was very good. So you'd shoot every month. You have to pass a test every month. There would be a fitness thing for your physical fitness. Your medical ability, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but you sort of come to a paramedic sort of level and your understanding, because if someone gets shot next to you, what do you do? You can't say, well, we'll go to hospital. You know, you've got to deal with it then. I think it's the. I think I was confident in my ability, and one of the reasons I left was because as I was getting older, my hearing was gone. In the days when we used to go to Hereford, you'd have a thunder flash thrown in the car, and it wasn't until the Metropolitan Police decided in its wisdom that the protection officers would have hearing tests. And I was saying to the Queen something like, I'm going to be leaving or whatever. And she said, why? And I said, it was a whole host of reasons. I had two new children. I was getting into my 50s. And I said, I'm actually getting deaf. She said, oh, you've been deaf for ages. She said, when you turn round, she said to me and talk to me, she said, you know, you lip read. And I do. I mean, I put this hearing aid in today, which I don't normally wear. My children just despair with me, you know, because I'm forever saying, what, pardon, what do you say? But anyway, so... So I was confident in my own ability. And the other thing is, it's a bit like being a Christian, really. You know, you can't be a Christian on your tod. You just can't. You have to have refreshment. You have to have nourishment. You have to have breakfast with Jesus, like we're having breakfast today. You know, you have to feed on him. And so from my spiritual life, and when I sort of had, you know, in sort of evangelical terms, a quiet time, you know, it worked better. I mean, work long hours. I mean, really, really long hours. So, yeah.
Good. Thank you. Hands up if you've got a question.
Did you ever have to... Oh, gosh. Sorry. Did you ever have to use your gun?
No. It's a good question. No, I never used my gun. And the guy that shot his toe off, I mean, that was done in training. I carried a gun all the time. In lots of ways, it's a bit of a nuisance, really, but it's a fact of life. I never used to. Had a court occasion. The only time I really sort of got a bit wound up, I guess, was on New Year's Eve. We went to Southwark Cathedral for a service, and then the private secretary, in his wisdom, decided that the Queen would go to a doss house in Borough High Street, I think it was. And they'd invited all the sort of down and outs, you know, to come in for the new year, and the Queen was going to go and say hello before she got on a boat to go down to the dome. And we sort of go down to this basement area where these poor homeless guys have been drinking, you know, from about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, free food and booze. And by the time the Queen came down, which was about 9 o'clock at night, I think, with me, and there was no room, you know, they were all completely out of their brains and decided, you know, that they were going to talk to her and hug her and shake her hand and never let go of her. And some of the language was quite choice, as you can imagine. No, my only sort of nervousness was there, I suppose, where you had all these homeless people that were well tanked up in the presence of Her Majesty and me and sort of hanging on to her for dear life. But we managed to, there are ways of untangling them, shall we put it that way.
One more question. William.
How did I find what?
Can you repeat the question? Do you want to say it again, William?
Yes, sorry.
Several times you said people from sort of Prince Philip down, you were religious.
Yes.
How did you sort of find witnessing?
Well, I mean, basically, in relation to, start at the top, in relation to the Queen, you know, I've sort of been a lay preacher most of my Christian life. So I would always talk to her about sort of, you know, I've come from a Baptist sort of free church background. So she didn't quite understand that, but I've now become an Anglican, thanks to Mr. Buse. So we would have quite interesting chats about stuff. In relation to around the world, it's just by the way you live, I think, really. I think that people have a very strange view of Christians. You know, I think they think we're wet and we're, you know, don't enjoy ourselves or, you know. For me, you know, life after death starts now, you know, and I think it's about, look, you know, I'm not sanctimonious. I believe what I believe. I know Jesus died to save me. I know I'm a Christian. I know I screw up. I know I made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, it's just living your life in that sort of knowledge, really. And people say, you know, I might say something and they say, well, you shouldn't say that. I thought you were a Christian or whatever they say, you know. It's just living your life. It's witnessing. It's the way you are, really, more than what you say, you know. I'm much far more used to sort of being in a pulpit nowadays, and it's, you know, you say what you're saying and people don't question you. But when you live in the real world, it's sort of the way you live.
David, thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
David will be around for a little while, so if you want to talk to him one-to-one, please do. There may be some food left on the table. Help yourself. If you can help us get the church back to its normal layout, ready for tomorrow morning. And if you're visiting, you're very welcome to join us tomorrow at 10:30, our main morning service. Thank you for coming. God bless you.